Hello and welcome to the Risk Map podcast, our look ahead at the coming 2 weeks in the global business landscape, brought to you by Control Risks, the international business risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker, Global Research Director based in London.
And I'm Michael Moran in New York, Managing Director for Global Risk Analysis. Welcome to the podcast.
In this edition, we look at South Africa's narrow and perhaps temporary avoidance of a credit downgrade, the latest BRICS country to flirt with junk status. We check in on Peru's tightly fought presidential election, where less than 40,000 of the country's 21 million eligible votes separate the rival candidates. But first, Brexit, the referendum on Thursday, the 23rd of June, that will determine if the United Kingdom detaches itself from the European Union. I'm joined here in London by David Lee, our senior analyst for Europe. David, the polls are absolutely deadlocked, but I'm going to ask you to make a call. How is the UK going to vote?
Yeah, the polls are very close, as we're just 2 weeks out, and they have been all the way through. There's been some small movements, but pretty much it's been just over 50 to just under 50, one side or the other. And I think that's going to be the result. My prediction is that the Remain camp will scrape home with 52, 53%, something in that region.
Great. Okay, David, let's pick it up from there and take things forward. What happens the day after? Let's assume that you're right, and let's assume that the United Kingdom votes to stay in the European Union. What does the next day feel like?
I think the result, if it is, as I predict, a very narrow victory for Remain, will be portrayed as a personal and political victory for David Cameron, who has convinced a Eurosceptic Conservative Party, and to an extent a Eurosceptic country, to go with him on this and to accept the idea that the EU is imperfect, but it can be improved, and that the UK's best interests are served by staying in. I think there'll be something of a government reshuffle. The divisions within the Conservative Party are now so strong that some of the higher profile figures who are members of the government who've campaigned to leave will probably have to go. I'm thinking of people like Chris Grayling, Michael Gove here. Some will have to stay to prevent any form of mutiny within the party. I don't think Cameron can totally wreak vengeance upon the leavers, but I think there'll be a government reshuffle pretty soon. I think the move within the EU will be perhaps a move towards reopening the treaties and having a new negotiation, I think.
Okay, so that's the day after, Dave. Prime Minister Cameron really wanted to resolve this issue once and for all for a generation, he said. So what does it feel like a year from now, or maybe further into the future? Is there a more cooperative or at least a more peaceful relationship between the UK and the European Union?
I don't think so. I think the UK's relationship with the EU in the last 10 to 15 years is pretty much what we're going to see in the next 10 to 15 years. I think when the Conservative Party is in power, it will be the main issue of controversy affecting the country. I think if the Labour Party ever returns to power, which is open to question at the moment, I think the relations will improve just as they did when Tony Blair and Gordon Brown were Prime Minister. But we've already seen one prominent member of the Leave campaign today saying that he thinks the Conservative leadership in succession to Cameron will be won by whoever promises a new referendum. So that doesn't exactly bode well for more harmonious relationships.
Dave, finally, there's been quite a lot of plans put on hold. There's been quite a lot of anticipation in the business community of the referendum. Once it's over, do you think that confidence will return to the business community and that the United Kingdom will once again be seen as a reasonably safe and stable place for investment?
Yeah, I think so. There's been an awful lot of waiting and seeing going on in the last year to 2 years, particularly since the Conservatives won a majority at the general election in May 2015, and were already committed to holding this referendum. So I think a number of businesses will say the UK has all the structural and logistical advantages it's always had, and now that uncertainty that's been hanging over it for a number of years now is gone. So I do think the UK's position with regard to inward investment will probably get quite a lot better if things do go that way.
Dave, I know we're going to come back to you on this. So for now, thank you very, very much.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, Chuck. Two candidates in Peru fought hard for the right to succeed President Ollanta Humala, and now, with the votes being counted, it looks like Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, a former World Bank economist, will prevail by the thinnest of margins over Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of the disgraced 1990s-era President Alberto Fujimori. Joining me from Bogota is our Andean analyst, Laura Sharkey.
So this has been a very tightly run race. How is Peru going to react to a victor who wins in such a slim margin?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as the results stand at the moment, it looks like Kuczynski is in the lead with 50.1% of the vote and Fujimori with 49.9%. And I'm not sure that the question is what the victor means. It's actually how those votes were distributed. It's more that people in Peru are voting against Fujimori and for Fujimori than for Kuczynski himself. So as normally when we have an election this close, we have almost 50% of the population against the president just by the nature of the votes. In this case, it's even more going to be a challenge for Kuczynski because the vote was less in support of him, but for many people, it was a case of a lesser evil and them trying to get Fujimori out of the race.
So, Laura, what is this in terms of implications for business in Peru? Had there been a real distinct favoring by business in Peru between these two candidates?
I think it's important to note that the two candidates have broadly similar economic policies. Businesses were worried in the first round of the elections when leftist candidate Veronica Mendoza reached third place. But since she didn't make it through to the runoff, there hasn't been that same amount of concerns. As I say, both maintain broadly liberal policies. I think Kuczynski, if we look at his background, was broadly favoured and continues to be broadly favoured by businesses. You know, he's a technocrat, he has experience in Wall Street, and also he has been part of the government. He served in several ministries of the Peruvian government, so his experience there is sound. And I think when we look at the two major concerns of businesses in Peru, they tend to be related either to social unrest around their investment projects and just the confusing nature of the bureaucratic system in Peru. And I think that he's going to actually attempt to make strides in both of them. He's definitely likely to propose a conflict management strategy, but that could take time to come into effect. And similarly with bureaucratic requirements, he will try and streamline some of the more lengthy and confusing requirements for businesses operating in Peru. But just to caveat that, he does not have the majority in Congress. That belongs to Fujimori's party. And that means that where they didn't necessarily agree on policies, he may have challenges relating to his own governability. Whether he is able to pass some of the more sweeping changes through is going to be a fact that only time will tell us.
Well, Laura Sharkey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mike, it's tick, 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 go the bricks, or so it seems for many of them. Brazil's embroiled in recession and the impeachment of its president. Russia, too, is in recession and internationally sanctioned. China's economy has slowed, and its heavily indebted banking system gives the world the shivers. India alone appears to be growing briskly.
But the fifth BRICS nation, South Africa, can claim some measure of victory, having avoided a downgrade of its sovereign debt recently. George Nichols is Senior Managing Director for Southern Africa in our Johannesburg office. George, is South Africa out of the woods?
It's got a reprieve from being out of the woods, but I think the real test will come at the end of the year when there's a ratings review. So the effort put in by the South African government to ensure that the sentiments positively maintained has taken place. But there's three things that we'll do between now and December to make sure that we don't have a ratings downgrade then. The first one is to stimulate the economy. It's limping along and it needs to really generate the growth that everybody expects. And to do that, they need to certainly deal with the contraction in the mining sector, the retraction in the agricultural sector, and the general retraction in the commercial sector. Secondly, it's very important that they put a cap and maintain government spending in line with the budget projections. And the areas in the past where this has been a problem is wage increases for public servants, which have exceeded budget and inflation. And lastly, they've got to stimulate growth through new jobs and reduce the high levels of unemployment. So it's okay for now, and what South Africa's received is a lot of hope and promise, and the next 6 months is looking for delivery on that.
If you were conducting business in South Africa, what would you want to see the government do immediately?
Well, immediately curb spending on public service and certainly restructure state-owned enterprises which are poorly performing or technically bankrupt. And things such as the South African Airways is one of those that really needs attention. The second thing is to ensure that the power utility Eskom really has got a grip on load shedding and that we have the necessary power available to expand capacity and production.
All right. Well, George Nichols, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mike, before we wrap up, let's touch on a few more events on the risk radar over the next 2 weeks. On Saturday, the 11th of June, Air France pilots say they will join strikes over the government's new labor reforms that have been disrupting supply lines and travel throughout the country. Travelers should continue to anticipate cancellations and delays.
On Monday, 20 June, the United Nations will observe World Refugee Day, even as the greatest refugee crisis in a generation rages on in Europe, challenging the Schengen borderless system and the EU's very being.
And on Saturday, the 25th of June, Iceland will hold its presidential election. The political environment remains charged following the resignation of former Prime Minister Sigmundur Gunnlaugsson after his name emerged in the Panama Papers tax avoidance scandal.
Thank you, Chuck. That wraps up this edition of the Risk Map podcast, produced by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. Our podcast is produced every other Friday and could be found on iTunes, Podbean, or the Control Risks website, www.controlrisks.com. There you can also learn about our new online training course to prepare for active shooter incidents in workplaces or in public places as well.
For now, this is Charles Hecker in London, signing off.
And in New York, I'm Michael Moran. Thanks for listening.